Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Positively Trek, the finale of Season 3 of Strange New Worlds. I have to say that... Hey, Dan, are you going to get that?
Who's at the door?
I think you'd better get the door, Dan. I think it's time to get the door.
I'll get the door.
Okay. I bet you it's Skip.
And now suddenly we're 10 years in the future and we have no idea what that was about.
Still recording Positively Trek, everybody. My funny beard has grown, and that's about it. This was... I feel like this was a finale that had a little tiny screenplay or a little tiny stage play wrapped inside of it, like a little candy filling. An interesting end. And I have to say, I am glad that we got some closure at the end of this one. But yes. Dan, what did you think about the pacing of this episode?
Holy mackerel! Okay. I think for as much as they crammed into it, they did the best they could with the pacing, but like, hoof, boy, there's a bit of a like dinner scene at one point, but other than that, it is plot, 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 plot. There's very little character stuff until an exception is made towards the end of the episode, but hoof, it is, you know, plot point, plot point, plot point, and we need to get everybody caught up really fast.
Not a shred of dialogue was wasted whatsoever. And I feel like this is kind of like an inversion from our last episode where I feel like they really built up the plot and then had to end it really fast. I feel like this time around, they really needed to squeeze in as much as they could to get to kind of that really cool ending that we hinted with that really terrible gag I did by knocking on a table that was next to me. Honestly, I don't feel like this has to fall into the entire episode because I feel like this was sort of put in to initiate the relationship between Spock and Kirk. And I feel like we can talk about this and then get to the episode itself, because though it has a plot point in it, I really want to talk about the fact that, and younger listeners will know the meaning of this, Kirk and Spock get shipped, literally. If you don't know, if you're not dealing with them Gen Alphas or Zeds or whatever they are, relationshipping people, like getting people into a relationship, is now termed shipping. And to fire their phaser at that Vesda time portal thing along the ley lines of whatever. And really, you need to watch this episode to know what we're talking about. So please stop listening and watch it if you haven't yet. Yes. You need to fire that phaser directly at this box to get through the portal. And so Kirk and Spock from the Farragut and the Enterprise managed to do this cool Dragon Ball Z style attachment thing through a Vulcan mind meld to be able to fire this phaser. But I think you and I both got some real will they or won't they kind of vibes between their conversation, would you say?
Yeah, and I'm going to say a phrase that I feel like I've said a lot this season for various reasons, it wasn't subtext. It was text. Like they were, it was not even an undercurrent of it.
No.
Like they directly call it out. Like, oh, I'm glad we decided to have this meeting in a bar. And like the look that Ortegas gives the two of them when right. everything's going on, she kind of like looks away and rolls her eyes a little bit. And watch that scene from start to end. Like Kirk is kind of doing his like thing where he's whatever. Spock is like laser focused yeah. on Kirk the yeah. whole time. He doesn't blink. His eyes are wide and he's got this like fascinated look on his face. It's great. Like I love the direction of the scene. I love the acting in the scene. It's going to make the slash. Okay. You talked about shipping for the younger listeners and viewers, slash fiction for the very old listeners and viewers, myself among them. Kirk Spock slash fiction originated the genre, if you will. And it's come full circle here.
No holds barred whatsoever. And you can almost say, and using a Ghostbusters reference, there's sort of a crossing of the streams that takes place yes. as well. before we get demonetized by YouTube, I feel like we're going to stop talking now. but yeah, I really have to say that they didn't really even give the captain of the Farragut any agency whatsoever in that whole procedure. She's just politely sitting in the back while her first officer basically does whatever it is he needs to do. I hope they do a little bit more to bring Kirk onto the ship, because right now it feels like it really does sort of act like a sitcom when like the extra character just shows up at the front door and just walks in. Like Kirk is basically the Urkel of Strange New Worlds at this point. He just comes through the front door and does yeah. whatever he wants.
I mean, plot-wise, at least they had a reason. This time they needed another ship and the Farragut was nearby. It's absolutely. Like, okay, not as egregious as 4.5 Vulcans, where no. he like beams on board. He's like, hey, is my brother here? And they're like, no, he left. He's like, okay, well, how about a wacky adventure with some other characters here then? Okay.
Sure. Why not, Jim? Come on down. And also, this is where Spock starts calling Kirk Jim.
Yes.
As well. I appreciated that little piece here, because that's gonna come around on so many occasions moving forward. And I really appreciate that.
Well, I love that it adds more layers to what we've already seen in Star Trek, right? Like my brain goes to those notable moments when Spock is called out for calling him Jim and stuff, right? Where mm-hmm. Kirk's like, after he's resurrected, right? He's like, yeah. Spock, Jim, don't you remember? And it's yeah. just like, this is one of the things that he's referring to yeah. now when he says, don't you remember?
Don't you remember that time in the Enterprise mess hall when you mind melded me? Not just me. okay, so just had to get that out of my system, because yeah, it was a very fun little bit there.
Oh, and we can't talk about what happened on that moon of Orion.
No. And I also appreciate the conversation with Alon later when Kirk is like a steel trap. That was
oh god, yeah. mind meld.
Yeah. Oh. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
So good.
Yeah. So let's get to the actual meat and potatoes of this episode. So we have the return of Ensign Gamble, kind of sort of.
Yes.
Maybe.
Gosh. Yeah. Doing exactly the thing that I was like I was hoping they wouldn't do, but also I'm glad the actor's getting work. So
you know, and he came back looking like a villain from He-Man. So that's also really cool as well, because he's pretty metal. Gamble just goes full metal there with that weird 1980s mask thing going on. I do have to say I quite appreciated. He plays a good eyeless villain. I think that him and Sam Neill have really finalized that as being the devil incarnate having no eyes. And for those of you mm-hmm. who haven't seen the movie Event Horizon, that's what I'm talking about. So super disturbing, his little cult of eyeless people. as well.
Yeah.
Not my favorite way. I don't do eye stuff very well. And so watching people just stabbing their eyes was a little tough. And I know it's all pretend, it's all acting, but those people really sold it. That was good acting. Oh my gosh.
Definitely. And maybe a little symbolic, something we'll talk about later, that this theme that kind of continues to run through the episode.
We do. We have this continuation, right? And you know, you and I have kind of talked a little bit about how they're gonna play with this. We do get a lot of throwback to that episode, plus a completion of the Gamble arc, I guess, the best way to put it. Like, we were hinted at the fact that the demon that took over him was stuck in a transporter buffer, and then it survived the purge of the transporter buffer, which, I mean, par for the course, that all works. Interesting, though, that they chose the concept of ley lines. Dan, are you familiar at all? You and I kind of jokingly get into the wooey stuff every now and again, watch ghost videos together and whatnot. What do you think of their kind of slip into more of like a TOS-y style rather than being speculative fiction, being full on sci-fi?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, ley lines aren't like I would need a bit of a refresher, but my years of, you know, driving back home to the parents' farm at 2 a.m. and being able to get, you know, far flung AM stations from the US and listening to Coast AM with Art Bell. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I think I've heard ley lines in that context before. Yeah, I don't, it kind of feels to me, especially with Sam Kirk's reaction when he says ley lines and Spock just like looks at him and he's like, they're real.
Right.
Like, okay. And then Spock kind of buys the concept pretty quickly after that.
So. Yeah. So there's actually a book by a guy who actually wrote The Social Network. I forget his name, and I think I have the right number. The 38th Parallel, I think is what it's called. I read it one time when I was leaving Star Trek Las Vegas. I picked up the book and read it on the flight home. And it talks about the idea that along this parallel, along the Earth, there tends to be a fair amount of wacky phenomenon, from UFOs to Bigfoot. And his argument is, of course, that all of these different phenomena are actually connected to each other. And so, you know, if there's Bigfoot, there's probably going to be a connection to UFOs. There's probably going to be a connection to poltergeist activity. There's going to be a connection to a number of other whatever you'd like kind of things. So them kind of taking on that concept of ley lines, especially for the purpose of some kind of quasi universal evil, actually, for me, in terms of the logic, makes sense. I don't personally fall into the I believe in ley lines or not myself, but at the very least, it's something that I've had sort of a passing fascination towards. So I'm the same thing with Kirk, just kind of being like, you know, their thing, you know, this is interesting, that kind of bit. So I did appreciate the fact that he could do that. And I think also, given the portal situation, you're a Stargate fan. Dan, tell us all about it. What do you think?
Yeah. So this episode to me, and I'm not even talking about the portal necessarily, just the way the episode plays out and what happens felt very Stargate, and specifically SG-1 to me, where, so, okay, for those of you familiar with the series, you'll probably know what I'm talking about. For those of you not, the main scientist on the show, Daniel Jackson, is an archaeologist, but he's also just like a science fiction scientist. So he knows a million other things too, apparently. They kind of do this thing where they like have to discover something buried in ancient past or whatever. And once they put their mind to it, once they kind of turn their attention to it, they figure it out within about 40 minutes. So for most of the seasons, that has to do with ancient Egyptian stuff that's kind of playing into the Goa'uld mythology and stuff. But towards the end of the series, they do a bit of a left turn and start talking about a different storyline, part of which delves into Arthurian legends. Mm. So they're like, oh, we need to figure out what Merlin was and the true identity of Merlin and find him. And of course, by the end of the episode, because they've turned their attention to it, they do. So there I don't you know, go. This just felt very much like, oh, we got to study this and do this. And oh, we figured this out. Now we understand the underpinning of all evil in the universe or something. And it was like, oh, okay.
Well, I guess that's wrapped up in a neat little package.
Indeed. And then even just on a superficial level, like the planet they visit and all of that, it felt very Stargate to me.
Yeah. On our second watch, and Dan and I were able to have two bro downs over this episode, which I was very happy about. I brought candy the second time, and he brought potato chips, and it was great. Just a little tap into the Barry Dan friendship saga that everyone is so interested in. But you'd actually mentioned that, you know, this actually, the way they talk around the table does actually hearken to the TOS and the Children Shall Lead sort of feel, right? Of like these sort of vast sweeping pronouncements about evil. This actually has precedent in Star Trek. And mm-hmm. so, you know, as much as I think you and I kind of did that and the Children Shall Lead episode for laughs, this one's done a little more seriously, but definitely to cut the chaff, they just blast out at idea, solved, going, moving on. So I'm glad mm-hmm. other sci-fi like Stargate does this too from time to time. So
yeah, for sure.
Uncharted territory.
Yeah, I feel like in like specifically that scene around the table in the science lab where they're kind of sussing out Marie Battelle's role in all of this and what she is. That to me was the weakest part of the episode because mm-hmm. it felt like we've got to establish this about the character and we've just kind of got to get there through sheer force of dialogue, I guess.
And she could have just said, "I want to be a statue, Chris."
Yeah, like, so at the beginning, you know, they're at one point, and then by the end, they've said, if that's the case, so many times, and built such a mythology around this, that apparently by the end, she is the culmination of every species everywhere's belief in and ability to fight evil, or something. Make it make sense, I guess? I don't know. I mean, they buy it, and that does seem to be the case. I just, I don't know how they get there.
They would make good podcasters, I think.
I guess so,
just,
yeah.
Just yes-anding each other until they come to a conclusion. So, and I mean, isn't that how most problems get solved in this world? By just yes-anding your way through the problem. There really wasn't any point I found. And maybe that's the criticism we have, is there was no one who was like, wait a minute. This,
yeah.
What? And they just
other than going. Like Pike occasionally looking confused and saying, so you're saying that, and then he would repeat what had just been said, and they're like, yes, Chris, that's what we're saying. That's the truth.
Yeah.
Go with it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it, and I think that is where we just don't get a lot of time to breathe in the pacing of this. But I guess in that respect, we get a bit of a payoff, I feel, in two places where things really do slow down. And I think the first one I want to talk about, because it actually kind of, we're going to stick within the confines of the storytelling itself. We do get some adventure with the pacing, I think, which is good, though it is still really fast, right? They go down to this planet, Skygowan.
Skygowan, yeah.
Yeah, Skygowan with these gigantic diamond buildings that float that I actually found like, felt like a Sonic the Hedgehog level kind of little, you know?
Yeah.
But
I don't know why, but I was picturing like the diamonds that float above the heads of the Sims.
That's a pretty important Sim if they have a diamond that big.
Right.
You know, we're dealing with several hundreds of stories.
Exactly.
Could they get into like a building with that diamond moving over top of them? They'd feel like they'd knock a lot of things over. It'd be cataclysmic if they had to go to the store or go on a highway. Anyways, I just left us for a minute. But on Skygowan, we get a very fun and entertaining little bit of away team action, right? We've got Lon, we've got Chapel, who have an interesting conversation about Spock's nerve pinch and how Chapel never got it, but Lon did. So again, the two ladies who have known Spock just mm-hmm. casually talking about it, I find that still pretty interesting.
That was funny. And Chapel seemed a little put out that Lon was able to master it so quickly. And Lon, when she neck pinches that guy, she just kind of looks up and is like,
that's yeah. Right. Ooh, boy.
Yeah, it was funny given what they said in the previous episode about how there's like, oh, there's no awkwardness and stuff. This was a little, there's a little hint of it there, which was awkward. Interesting.
Yeah. I do find as well, though, when they get up onto one of those diamond buildings, when you've got Mbenga who looks at this portal box and his own story is written there. I found that interesting.
In Swahili
yeah. too, right? Jambo, that's all I know in Swahili, which is hello. I guess Hakuna Matata as well is no worries. Is from the Lion King. It's a Swahili word anyways, phrase. Anyway.
But interesting.
What I find interesting about that is the fact that we're still getting this idea that history is not a linear thing, that we are in a block universe that has some refraction, I guess you could say, taking place to it. So not only are we looking at the present, we're also seeing the future, and then we're also seeing the past written in the future to a person. And I actually think that that was handled pretty well. I feel like that's a difficult thing to handle, and the writers actually did a pretty good job of it. And I feel like there's more that's going to come from that. I don't think we've seen the end of this memory / forward facing future refracting on itself, but yeah. I'll save that little piece for later. But we get Gamble's return, and I feel like, despite the fact that he's there, I feel like their reaction to him really didn't, like, they weren't like Gamble or anything like that. They kind of just sort of swallowed hard and were like, oh damn, he's here.
Well, there's no time for
no, there's no time for surprise.
My God, Gamble, how did you? There's no time for that.
Yeah, quiet, zap. Anyways, I also found that the people of Skygowan seemed very nonplussed by the strange intruders in their little temple building. They all seemed to be mulling about going about their business, much like the Borg would if you were on their ship not posing a threat, hey?
Yeah, it was interesting. There's one part, and I mean, we know there's lots of interstellar visitors to this planet. Like, they're no stranger to that. We see Orions and all sorts of other people around. But when they were up in the temple plotting and trying to figure out, like, well, Gamble's got all the people down below under his sway and stuff, I kind of thought the people in the temple were on Gamble's side as well. So it seemed weird that they're just like, oh, they're plotting. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Let's get him, fellas.
Then we very quickly figure out that Gamble is among those people, though, too. So he might have been controlling them or something. I don't know.
Hey, guys, some people are coming right away. Act natural. I'll take care of it, you know?
Yeah. Also, by the way, something you said way before I was wanting to respond to, the non-linearity of things. I feel like they primed us a little bit with the previous episode as well, through the lens of time, with all the kind of fun stuff they did with cause and effect there. It makes us more easily able to accept it in this one on a larger scale. They kind of did the microcosm there. And now we get the, like, oh, but also the entire history of the universe kind of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like Strange New Worlds has been doing that since before Strange New Worlds, right? Pike gets his revelation of his fate, right, with the Klingons way, way back. And I feel like he's been living with the understanding of his own future for this entire time. That's why, again, I really feel like they've handled this concept of time and linearity being kind of something that can refract on itself pretty well.
And it's also, and okay, I don't want to spoil much about this movie at all, because I just finally saw it for the first time. But so if you have any desire to see the movie Sinners and haven't watched it yet, maybe just scrub forward about 30 seconds. But there's a scene where they kind of pierce the veil of time, and past, present, and future all kind of come together in this one scene. And that made me think of this as well, that, like, it's set in the 1930s, and this guy can play music with such passion that it destroys the walls of space and time. And so around him, there's, like, ancient African dancers from the 13th century, and also, like, people on like turntables and with electric guitars. And so it's so cool. It's,
that movie takes some interesting turns.
Oh, it is the neatest sequence I've ever seen in a film. Maybe that might be exaggeration, but it's pretty close anyway.
Yeah, it's memorable, I think, is the best part for what is otherwise kind of a horror movie.
Right? Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I feel like that happened in Nope as well, where you kind of get some cool African-American history kind of laced into this concept of horror. Also, there's a chimp scene that I can never watch again.
Interesting.
Just going to throw that out there.
if you can't handle ape horror, please stay away. It's very disturbing. Wow. Anyways, outside of very disturbing, so Gamble does have complete control over these people. And I feel like they really needed to keep the scene, and I'm glad they did, because he is ultimately a cult leader. And the plan here is that he is going to get the other Vesda to possess basically every man, woman, and child on this planet, and then ultimately create a dark army of the night that would then come out of Skygowan and, I would say, ostensibly begin, you know, dominating the galaxy in a pretty existential fashion. But again, like I had said, I feel like there could or should have been more exposition, because he has these people literally gouging their eyes out for him, and it doesn't really feel like he does much to get there. Again, I don't feel like that piece was earned, though I have to say Gamble himself is played really well. He is a menace. He is a menacing character. And I feel like his juxtaposition from being this doe-eyed, very sweet character from Starfleet to being this horrifying, I would say, 80s style fantasy villain plays well. I just wish they would have given us a bit more exposition on him getting to the point of these people doing such horrible things. But again, we were strapped for time, and he needed to get Mbenga through that portal.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is another area where it's giving me Stargate vibes, especially those, again, the last little bit of the series where they're dealing with the Ori, these religious pilgrims that are going to convert the galaxy basically. And Stargate has the luxury of time a little bit, where it can build that thread over episodes, and we see like people being skeptical, and then the Priors, they're called, doing these like miraculous things that make people, oh wow, okay, I will follow them. And I think we can kind of basically through dialogue, I guess, assume that Gamble did similar, right?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, like you say, we don't see a lot of that. We just get basically Roger Corby saying like, oh, he appeared to them and now they all follow him, kind of thing. They're all convinced he's the coming of their gods or something.
Yeah. So again, I hate to beat a dead horse, and I'm getting the stick out. This is because we only get a few episodes per season now, because streaming has kind of ruined things. I think like if we would have, I'm assuming Stargate and Stargate SG-1 had 20 some odd episodes per season.
Yeah, right? 22 to 24, I think. Yeah.
And so they could build something like that a lot better. And again, I'm happy we have Star Trek anyways, but I think this is ultimately the trade-off. And that's kind of what I've been trying to get to since we started talking about this episode, the final episode of the season, that unfortunately they've had to cram a lot into very, very little. And thankfully it has been a lot of quality over quantity. And I will say that I have enjoyed this season quite a bit, but the breakneck pace to get to this final standoff, pulling Mbenga because they need two to go through the portal, and kind of giving Mbenga this final, I feel like his arc with Gamble doesn't really, it almost like the wound gets reopened and it doesn't get addressed by the end of this episode. I feel like Mbenga is leaving, watching his protege once again, you know, basically get mutilated by, you know, some kind of cosmic universal existential evil. So I hope there's some kind of recourse in the next season to come, in the very few episodes we have, where Mbenga gets to reckon a little bit with this, because I feel like he kind of gets done pretty dirty in this episode. Really not a lot. I mean, obviously we've got to get to Christopher Pike and Batel, but I don't know. I feel really bad for Mbenga ultimately.
Yeah, it feels like he went through everything he did with Gamble in prior episodes so that he would be on the landing party in this episode, so that he would see that story and realize that he has a part to play And then once they've done that and established that and used him for that, that's about it.
Like, he kind of gets like, thrown to the ground, and that's it.
He fulfills his role in the episode. And yeah, like you say, he was tossed aside a little bit. Mm-hmm. He gets one interesting moment, I think, where he realizes that Gamble hasn't killed him yet, so he still needs him to reopen the portal back, and then, you know, holds the blade to his own neck.
Yeah.
And then that moment is dispelled very quickly by, I guess, the internal mechanisms of this temple, which separate them. And a lot of stuff happens in this where I'm not sure why it happened.
Nope,
or that, even maybe how it happened.
That vexed me. I have to say, like, when it scanned their face, the first time I watched, I'm like, what's going, what, okay, Gamble's gone. Okay, bye. Mm-hmm. See you later.
Yeah, which kind of makes sense because the, like, your brain kind of fills it in a bit in that this temple is designed as a prison for them. So it recognizes him again. If we're dealing with a block universe where time is all mm-hmm. happened at once, it knows that, like, oh, this is the guy that will help him get through the portal, so let's separate them. And that only holds him for a little while. So, like, yeah. you piece that together when you think about it for a little bit after, but you're not really given time to think about it. It just all happens really fast.
Mm-hmm. And then we have Pike and Batelle come down to Skygowan. No need for any subterfuge or ruse. They just come down in full Starfleet gear. I love those jackets, by the way. Just real quick fashion conversation. Boy, I want one of those Starfleet jackets. Boy, are they nice.
Yeah, so we had Lon and them, like you said, undercover, had to do the ruse, had to do the neck pinch to get through the thing. We skip over, like you said, all of that with Pike and Batelle, and we just cut to them already up on that level going towards the thing. You're like, okay, I guess we don't need to show how they got through the bottom part.
Well, there's guards there. Apparently, who seem mildly incompetent. Maybe they're still on the ground. Maybe that pinch was a bad pinch. Maybe they're dead.
I guess so. Maybe Lon's not as good at it as she thought. And it turns out there is such a thing as a Vulcan death grip.
Oh, no. She killed them. Lon! She bullwinkled them. Guess it'll blow my own strength. Just like she did to that Gorn.
Oh, no. Oof. Old wounds.
Too soon?
Open.
Too everywhere. Soon? Too soon? Agree.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, but when you're prioritizing your health, it's easy to feel like you're missing out. With Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your fall favorites because they're made with Hero Bread sliced bread loaves, tortillas, bagels, dinner rolls, and more. Try their all-new Hero Noodles with 12 grams of protein and just 80 calories. You won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. They've even got small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular Hero Croissant. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at HERO.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
As always, Positively Trek is brought to you by its Patreon supporters, including Joyce Mirren, Brandy Jackala, Christina DeClercq-Zalagi, John Guppy, Out of Memory, Patrick Carlin, and Ricky Long. If you'd like to support the podcast, visit patreon.com/positivelytrek. You can join at any level and enjoy early access to episodes, ad-free episodes, episode shoutouts, executive producer credits, and more. Again, that's patreon.com/positivelytrek. Thank you so much to those of you supporting us. We truly do appreciate it. And now, back to the show.
Long and short of it, this gives us the opportunity to see Kirk and Spock do their amazing, cool spinning ship phaser move to reopen this portal. Because they talked about how many wattage they needed and how a phaser beam can do that. I loved the sciencey bits there because it gave Scotty and Pelia a chance to banter. And anytime those two start talking, I am all ears because just the way their chemistry, I just absolutely love it. I love the fact that a thousands-year-old lady with a very, very sweet kind of semi-Eastern European accent was kind of the mentor of Montgomery Scott. And I just, it built so much more to seeing him later that Pelia was part of his life, because it just makes so much sense to me.
There's a couple things with Scotty and Pelia, and I know I said there's not a lot of character bits, but they do manage to sneak little bits in when they're talking about, like, oh yeah, and Pelia would say something like, oh, we got to stop the evil from coming through. Right. Really? Pelia would say that? Like a vampire? Yeah. That was cute.
Oh.
I did also like Scotty's, you know, suggestion of a nuclear battery, and it's like, oh, it'd require a lot more power than that.
Two
batteries, which ultimately gives them the idea of like two starships. You know, one starship would get you about halfway there. It's like, how so about two?
It's a Zoidberg moment. I love it. It's very good. So they do this zappy thing, and then we get Pike and Batel are through the gate, and there's Mbenga, and then Gamble / the Vesda demon manages to get back, and I love how it like claws back into his back again. Ugh. like some kind of weird parasite. Like, I have to say, the characterization of these things, they're gross, but I do like the fact that you spotted one that, like, in its own way kind of flipped Batel the bird as it was spinning by. It like was like,
yeah, I love that. Yeah, they're swirling about the room, and then one of them goes by Batel and just like kind of like on its way by, like,
calls her the B word.
Really don't like you. Hiss.
You're going down. I'm gonna get you. And off exactly. It goes again. Oh, I love it. So we have this final moment where I'm expecting this massive standoff, right? I'm expecting we're going to see some real Harry Potter, Voldemort versus Dumbledore, whatever Star Wars analog you want. Put it in your brain, because I'm not thinking of one fast enough. And we'd get none of that. And this is where suddenly all of that fast pace stuff comes to a screeching halt. And I would say we get one of the most heartfelt scenes in Strange New Worlds history, and something that really does kind of like pull at the heartstrings a little bit. I do have to say this kind of plays like a stage play. The weird little memory world that Batel creates for Christopher before she says goodbye.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we're given to understand by the time it's all said and done, she did that for herself too, to like create all these memories of a life spent with Chris Pike to give her the strength to face the Vesda in the form of Gamble here. This whole sequence was great. Like, they did a really, really good job. Also, some of the best old age makeup I've ever seen in Star Trek.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They did a wonderful job there.
Better than Prometheus, I would argue.
Yeah.
Guy Pearce's old man, Waylon, not as believable.
Yeah. Yeah, so, they did a wonderful, wonderful job. But yeah, I love the pacing of all of this. They did this perfectly. And we get, you know, a year later, it feels like they've defeated the Vesda, and they're together, they're married, they're sharing this home together, and we go forward in time a little bit each time, but throughout it, this pervasive knock at the door that never gets answered, right? They they turn towards the knock at the door, and then the scene changes to the next one and the next one. I loved this. I thought this was really, really good. And the first time watching it, of course, not knowing entirely where it's going, but having a pretty good idea of who's at the door, but still not quite sure. And that revelation that, you know, they're waiting for Chris's accident to happen. And then he returns from that mission unchanged and fine. And played so well by everybody. It almost felt to me like the beginning bit of the movie Up, but like inverted a little bit, where there's like this air of tragedy to it at the beginning, but then all of a sudden hope and a happy life well lived on the back end. Whereas Up, of course, it was a life together and then tragedy and mm-hmm. then sad at the end. Right. But it had that same kind of emotional feeling to me as I was watching it.
Yeah. I guess for me, when Pike is knowing, you know, and they have a daughter at this point and a dog and this lovely life, and now they realize that the time has come for him to leave to go have his accident, right? You know, there's tears, he's sad, but they don't resist fate. They know that you can't cheat fate. And off he goes. And then that knock at the door when she answers, and there he is standing. And so you're looking over her shoulder at him, looking up at her with almost... It's almost a look of guilt on his face.
Yeah. This I've screwed up the universe because something is supposed to happen.
Yeah. And the wordless interaction they have when they embrace, and then he's sitting and explaining it to her, but just that moment where he's standing there, I have to say it tugged at the heartstrings a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know, maybe it's just the place I'm in, audience. I lost my stepdad, almost 2 months ago now. And it's very fresh still. And he was dying of a form of cancer that really just made it a matter of time. And I have to say the man left this world with a great deal of dignity, accepting his fate with a bravery that I hope I even have a shred of when my time comes. And I hope that isn't for a long time. But anyways, long and short of it, seeing him saved, seeing him not have to endure a fate he had resigned himself to, I don't know, it just kind of hit in a way that I think they did a very, very good job of managing through it. Because I think the other piece of it is when they talk, there's that comet that goes by, when they kind of come to this, come to terms with the fact that now they don't have to worry about that, you know, big knot in the rug that's getting closer and closer. Now they're past it. And now the future is wide open, as Tom Petty would say. And for me, that it hit in such a profound kind of way that I gotta say that some of the best Trek I've seen, and very inner light. I give it a very inner light kind of feel that we sort of get this lifetime in a moment. That though I know it's used by Battelle to gain the energy to fight and defeat the Vesda, I feel like it's a gift that she gave to herself and to Pike.
Mm-hmm. And it has me wondering, and I think this is the implication of the episode. They lived all of those years.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I think. I don't think it jumped like we saw.
No,
I think it they really did live all of those years together.
Pike gets to live in some interesting alternate virtual spaces in his life.
Mm-hmm. And you said too that it felt a bit like a stage play. I liked that characterization of it as well. Kind of I guess a couple sets, but very confined, very minimalist. There's not a lot of we don't see Pike on that freighter with the cadets or anything. It's always their living room, their kitchen, and their bedroom. Like it's very, very contained. And
it's less is more. Less is more. Yeah. And I think that's where the actors themselves get to really flex their muscles, because those two carry such an amazing relationship all the way to the end. And I bought it. And I think for any of our criticisms and, you know, the pacing and stuff, I would actually chalk that up mostly to they only got a few episodes comparatively to what there used to be. And if you were going to make any cuts, if you were going to make any kind of let's speed this up and get to it, I am actually glad, because giving us this little scene between Battelle and Pike, I think will go down in Star Trek history as some of the best little chunks of it. Like, I mean, it's up there for me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 100% agree.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, then we have the return, right? He gets the door the last time and there's Gamble. And I mean, you saw that coming. I feel like the fight between them happens really fast. I feel like it just, okay, we're going to just vanquish him super quick, glowy hands, boom. And then she disintegrates him and like a ghost trap, everyone falls back in and now she's a statue. And Pike looks, I don't know, just sort of like, oh, well, guess I'm alone with Mbenga. Better wake him up.
Yeah. So first of all, the speed with which she dispatched Gamble, I really liked that. Because the implication was like she got so much strength from these memories that she created with Pike. And like when they snap back there and she's facing Gamble, and Gamble's been cocky this whole time and just taking little shots, and he destroys the statue. And then like she just like gathers everything, and like Gamble's like, what? Like his face just like he was not expecting that.
He was wide-eyed. Oh wait, I guess he can't be.
A little wider-eyed than should be. But yeah, no, I like the implication that like, yeah, they lived all this and now suddenly she's 1,000 times more powerful than she was, kind of thing. Or whatever, right? I loved that revelation on Gamble's face that like, this is not how this was supposed to go down.
like Arrested Development, I've made a terrible mistake. And now she gets to be the guardian, right? And you've asked an interesting question on our show notes that I'm just going to throw out there. Is she there now? Like, is that it through Starfleet history that now she's a frosty statue?
And more importantly, I guess, than what I asked, like, is she there forever in the future? And was she there forever in the past as well? Like, when they visited earlier this season, there was a life sign reading in that statue, and it turns out it was Batel, right? So she's there for all time, I guess.
What's she doing?
Just guarding the Vesta, I guess.
Okay.
In a weird pose. I don't know. I
wouldn't want to hold that pose for very long.
No, for sure. And very Sisko vibes, right? Like this destiny that was established before she was even born, in as much as before is a concept that even applies in this. It's just she always has been and always will be, kind of thing.
I wonder though if the prophets / wormhole aliens and the Vesta have ever squared off then, you know? If we could get some kind of continuity there, because I feel like, you know, wormhole aliens / prophets are kind of timeless.
Yeah.
And it seems the Vesta are too.
Not to mention the fact that the Vesta are apparently from Q's homeworld. That world, Vadia 9, was referred to by Trelane as the old homeworld. So what's going on there?
Yeah. And also the fact that they are this sort of existential evil that all Star Trek species have faced off with, including the Gorn, that they've all fought this great evil. So what is that, right? What are we up against here? And shall we be seeing more of that as we have now seen the Metrons? We're seeing a lot of very kind of timeless creatures. What's going to happen next? And I guess that's where, though we now have fewer Star Trek's Strange New World seasons to come now, and we have to accept our fate, everybody. There's a knock at the door. I know, right? Imagine they show up at the end and be like, surprise, one more season, you know? What did we do to deserve this? And we just find out it was an implanted memory that never really happened. Oh.
Ouch, wow.
And now Dan's a statue.
Oh, this took a turn. I don't even... That was as fast-paced as this episode was.
Exactly.
What just happened to my destiny. Wow.
Bada bing, bada bang, bada boom. So I think we're kind of trailing into the end here, and I want to get into some of the final thoughts, as you like to say, the bring out your dead. And I want to say the other piece where I feel like the pacing really slowed down and we got some nice kind of banter was the captain's table. We have everybody showing up in a catalog version of themselves, I find. We've got everyone kind of wearing what they would normally wear, and some look like they're going to head for a jog, some feel like they're going to go down a runway, and a few look like they just fell out of a Eddie Bauer / LL Bean catalog. And then you've got Scotty showing up in his lovely brogues, looking his best,
in his full dress uniform,
just like Uhura. So
yeah, showing up in his full dress uniform, and as we saw, Uhura was the one who got him to do that, paying it forward, as she was, you know, the new crew member in season one, forced to come in her, not forced, but convinced to come in her dress uniform for the lols, right? That was great. I did love that he had the full tartan as well, and the Scott clan kilt, just like Scotty wore in TOS. Very, very nice.
It's brilliant. So who wore it best, Dan? Who did you like? Whose outfit did you like the best?
They all just had something very like specific to themselves, I thought was really good. I loved Ortega's kind of almost tracksuit type, you know, casual wear there. Pelia's knitted thing, I think.
She looked like Star Trek Ms. Frizzle.
Yeah. It was very, exactly.
She is Star Trek Ms. Frizzle.
Very veteran teacher in the staff room kind of thing. I love it.
They look like teachers in the staff room. You're absolutely right. That's
well,
what
she
I'm looking
did,
at.
For sure. Yeah.
No, they all do. They all, with the exception of Scotty, but they're all wearing kind of their own thing. Yeah. You know, Uhura was very 60s chic. I liked her.
With a lot of African elements as well. I like that.
Yeah, good coloring. I don't know. I've sort of had a low-key crush on Lon the entire time, and I have to say her sort of London smoldering look was quite captivating, I guess is the best way to put that.
Yeah, Lon with the kind of jacket going on reminded me of the outfit she wore in Tomorrow mm-hmm. that they stole from that Roots store in Toronto.
I wonder if that's, yeah, maybe she just altered it.
Could be. Yeah. It's similar. It's not exactly the same, but yeah, I like that. I liked a lot of the guys wear too. I think they were they put a little less thought into a lot of their outfits, which is typical, I think, of us guys generally.
Very understated.
Yeah. I liked Mbanga's kind of, almost, was it like, was he the one that was wearing almost like a North Face outerwear kind of spandexy? Yeah.
He looked like he was going to go on a jog shortly after,
mm-hmm.
or had to come from a jog.
Yeah, I like that. And Pike, like you said, L.L. Bean or Abercrombie and Fitch catalog kind of thing going on. Spock, of course, in his uniform.
Yeah. Just that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah. Absolutely.
No, it was a fun little bit there, but the last little piece of this, and this is where I think the pacing was good to be slow, because if you didn't catch it the first time, you will the second time. Pelia says something, and we don't get the whole story when she has her little slip that even Pike kind of raises his eyebrows at, as if he may have an inside track on. She said something about a doctor, was it? Or I can't remember.
Yeah, she said, it's like that time that I spent with the time-traveling doctor. Interesting. Second little nod to Doctor Who that we've seen this season, I guess, including like we saw the TARDIS in a earlier episode, very small in the screen, but it was there.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of time stuff, and Doctor Who, of course, deals with the paradoxes of time pretty much constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So are we going to have a really big, weird crossover? Like, this is bigger than the Flintstones meet the Jetsons.
Yeah. The other thing that needs to happen, I think, someday then is Carol Kane needs to play a companion on Doctor Who, and just no reference to like this or anything. Just she's one of the companions. Not to mention, I would just love that season anyway.
I think we've underestimated the Master's abilities, Doctor. Believe it or not, not the first time I've come across a Dalek.
Exterminate.
Oh my God.
That would be amazing.
That would be wonderful. Definitely.
So what do you got for some final thoughts, Dan?
Well, the big one that jumped out again, I think the second time we watched this is one that needs a rewatch for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was this constant referring back to memory. And there was,
yeah,
there was a line that, the destruction of all memory or something like that. And we were like, wait, what? Like, what does that mean? We had to back it up and kind of go, what does he mean by that? And then as we watched further, it kind of became more apparent that there's something that memory is like the ultimate enemy of the Vesta or something like that. Like their whole shtick seems to be everybody forgets about us, so we come back or something. This is just kind of speculation on my part. But ultimately what defeats them at the end is Battelle creating these memories mm-hmm. of this life spent with Pike, and that gives her the strength to fight and destroy them. And even during the closing captain's log, Pike talks about the importance of memory and like how the people around them, even though they may be gone, will always be there. They live on in our memories. Like it just, mm-hmm. they just kept hitting that touchstone. So yeah. There was something on the minds of the people writing this for sure. Yeah.
Well, even the Metrons in the last episode were talking about casually wiping Ortegas's memories should it be convenient.
Yeah.
So memory and time. Mm-hmm. really are kind of the philosophical underpinnings of Strange New Worlds, I would say.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts for the future? Do you have any direction you think they're going to head in the coming season? It's going to be such a short season. How many episodes did they say?
10 in the next season.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. So it's all four seasons are 10 episodes, and then the final season is going to be just 6 episodes.
That's the one. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've just got 16 left.
Oh, there's a knock at the door.
Yeah, right?
16.
I don't know. I first of all, I'm really glad this doesn't end with a cliffhanger. And it's not even the light cliffhanger that we got in previous seasons, right? Like season one ended with Una's arrest. You know, it wasn't the main thrust of the episode, but it was a light cliffhanger. Season two, of course, ended with the massive cliffhanger. Season three, they opted to head out on another adventure.
Yeah.
That's how it ends, right? I like the note they ended on. They kind of let Pike sit in his loss right now. And he's very melancholy on the bridge, but he's bowed, but he's not broken, right? Yeah. He comes on the bridge and the rest of the crew is obviously like, hey, how you doing, big guy, kind of thing. But he's still very like, you know, is this a hit it kind of thing? And he's like, it's whatever kind of adventure we want to make it. Interestingly, he doesn't say hit it though. He says, take us out, Ortega, whatever speed you like. And she's like, you asked for it. Yeah. I liked your comment that like, you know, 1/4 impulse. Oh, yeah. That's not what I'm. Okay.
I mean, that would be funny, but yeah.
Yeah.
No, she guns that thing. Mm-hmm. I think this gives the writers a completely blank slate now.
Mm-hmm.
They can basically do whatever, however, in whichever way. They have a number of loose threads that now they can openly call back on, especially from this season. We can bring back the Gorn. We can bring back the Q thing. We can bring back the Vesta. There's so much. And still very much like the Sword of Damocles hanging above our heads is mm-hmm. the accident that has to happen still. So I'm excited for Strange New Worlds. I really hope, you know, listeners and viewers, that as we call ourselves Positively Trek, we levy criticism in a way that doesn't say that we didn't like any of this. And I have to say, this is the strongest season of Strange New Worlds, in my opinion. And I would argue this is probably some of the strongest Trek we've had in a while. As much as I've loved other series, as much as I really love Lower Decks, I loved kind of how Discovery sort of finds its way later on. I have enjoyed it, you know, but I do have to say that the writers are really firing on all cylinders this season, and they have a lot of my confidence moving forward. I'm excited for what's coming up next.
Absolutely. I would totally echo those comments. I've really enjoyed this season. It's had its huge ups and its little bit of downs, but like overall a very, very strong season for sure. And this finale in particular, as much as we've talked about a couple of the issues we've had with it, I love this episode. Like, this is really good. This is one I'm going to be coming back to a lot.
It's very rewatchable.
To kind of absorb that feeling we get from it and get that vibe from it, which is a little different from what Star Trek tends to be. It's a little bit more on the woo side, but Star Trek has done that in the past, and it's an interesting kind of return to it here. Mm-hmm. And that whole final sequence was just so good. So top marks for me for this one, and huge excitement for the next season. See, folks, you don't have to do a cliffhanger to get people excited for the next season.
Yeah, you can end on what is, I would say, a very heartfelt note. Dan and I will definitely be tuning in. Coming up, though, I am excited for our next series of discussions, because I feel like our medium of listening to two people talk to each other and like create imagery is going to be a load of fun. We are going to be looking at Star Trek Con. Moving up here, and I and you have both had a chance to listen to the first episode, and folks, there's good Trek just constantly coming, and sometimes it doesn't have to tickle your eyeballs to tickle your brain. So I'm looking forward to those next discussions. I think there's a couple of interesting kind of fun out there episodes I'm going to be pitching to Dan moving forward. So stay tuned, everyone, and live long and prosper and stay positive.
Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.
Legendary doesn't happen by chance. It happens because it's what BetMGM does. Sign up for BetMGM and check out all the exciting new ways you can make this pro football season unforgettable. Shoot your shot with same-game parlays. Call your plays like a pro with live betting. Or bet on a market you didn't know existed thanks to BetMGM Originals. You'll be on the edge of your seat from the very first snap, no matter what type of fan you are. Earn BetMGM rewards points on every bet. Take advantage of football offers found nowhere else, like a second chance on a first touchdown bet. And keep an eye out for rewards dropping in your account throughout the season. Never settle for the ordinary. Sign up today. BetMGM. Make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Specific promotional offers are not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text OPENY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
Or I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Like, 'cause I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at BetterHelp.com.